Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Ardo Ocal. For the Stanley Cup playoffs, we are every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN, YouTube. You're not going to believe this, Wish.
No.
I can't believe we're about to say this on this show.
Okay.
But Brad Marchand has agitated some people. I can't believe it either.
You know, he is a special player, and that term applies to literally everything that that man does, which brings us to our first segment, Arda, which is the biggest playoff questions at this point in the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll begin with this one. Has Brad Marchand reached peak supervillain, or is he the hero that we need, Arda, against those pesky Maple Leafs?
So obviously there was a point in game three between the Bruins and the Leafs. The Bruins win, take a 2-1 series lead, reclaim home advantage. During the Trent Frederick goal, there was a little bit of a scuffle between Tyler Bertuzzi and Brad Marchand, which many people believe that Marchand ended up tripping Bertuzzi. It was a missed call. The play continued. And then Marchand, after they scored, he celebrated for half a second before turning back to Tyler Bertuzzi and yelling in his face, which then reignited the whole Brad Marchand is a pest to say it lightly. But yeah, I mean, look, then, but the best
but
part
then
is,
goes,
the, is
it goes beyond that.
Comments.
Then
yeah.
He scores the game-winning goal.
Yeah.
I mean, as one does. And then allegedly, and the lip readers believe they're right on this one, skates past the Toronto bench and says the series is over in five games. I mean,
I don't believe that.
You don't believe he said that?
I think he said there's 35 seconds left. I believe that part.
All right.
Many people are saying,
Arda, that he was taunting the Toronto bench. Bottom line, he's taunting the Toronto bench. And that is classic Marchand. And then also classic Marchand is also getting the opponents to talk about him after games.
Yeah, sure.
As Sheldon Keefe said, that he gets the calls. It's unbelievable, actually, how it goes. We've got to play through that. We've got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. There's not one other player in the series that gets away with that, but he does. It's an art. And he's elite at it. So at least game recognized game, I guess, in that instance for Brad Marchand and Sheldon Keefe. But again,
what a line. What a line. It's an art and he's elite at it.
I know.
What a line. That's one of my favorite coaches' lines. For him to even say that, it's unbelievable.
There you go.
Crazy.
Kenny Omega of rats, they call him. He's so elite. So again, this is what makes him special. As we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast here, is the idea that there's a special class of rat in this league. And I know that's a disparaging comment to make about the guy, but he has rat-like tendencies. When you think back to guys like Claude Lemieux, for example, to pull a name from my childhood, first jersey I ever owned, by the way, Claude Lemieux jersey. That's a guy that would agitate the hell out of other teams, but then also score the game-winning goal in a conference final. And there are guys that agitate. There's like your Nick Cousinses of the world, but I'm not looking for Nick Cousins to break a tie in game three of an Eastern Conference playoff series, right? But I expect Brad Marchand to do that. And that's the special part about him, Arda. He has mastered the art of agitation. He has mastered the art of underhandedness, of tripping guys on plays to benefit his teammate to score a goal. All of that stuff is elite, and it is an art. But at the end of the day, he's still, outside of Alex Ovechkin in the last 25 years, probably the best left wing in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the guy that will score that big goal for the Bruins in almost every situation. And that's what makes him such a remarkable player. And I know that we've talked about this before on the pod about like Hall of Fame, not Hall of Fame. Like, that guy's a Hall of Famer. It's going to probably piss off all of Toronto when they hold the ceremony for him. But that guy is absolutely a Hall of Famer in my eyes.
I hope he trolls Toronto by having the sketch and him in a Leafs jersey just to troll Toronto.
Pause on that for a second. Sidebar, because we're going to talk about some Utah stuff later. Did you see that that Shea Weber's contract is still on the books for the Arizona Coyotes.
Yes.
And that by Utah taking all of the contracts for the Coyotes, Shea Weber has the possibility of being the first Utah player in the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's a guy that needs to wear the jersey. That's the guy who needs to stand up there and say, as a proud Utah something, I am happy to represent this franchise as a Hall of Famer. That's what's got to happen.
I also made the joke under your tweet that they should retire his jersey number day one.
That's right.
Just Shea Weber bobblehead night.
Like, play it up, man. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. You were going to say about Marchand. I interrupted.
Just two things. So everyone pointing to the missed penalty on Tyler Bertuzzi. There was also a missed penalty, a high stick on Charlie McAvoy by John Tavares. So like, it wasn't like it was singled out. I just wanted to make that clear because a lot of people are just going to focus on the one side of things. There were definitely a couple of missed calls in that game. Yeah. So I just wanted to draw attention to that.
Now, before we move to our next question, I want to ask you two things. First of all, you run back Swayman in game four. And then second of all, are the Leafs, where's the Leafs heads at right now, Leaf fan?
Yes, you restart Swayman in game four. And the Leafs are, we did an episode where we were talking about the panic-o-meter and the Leafs were at a 10 to 15 out of 10. They're at a 27 now. This was it. Well, Austin Matthews saved the season in game two by scoring. Uh-huh. And now it's back to sell the team.
Well, I appreciate the fact they're not at a 67. That'd be really high on
that. That would be very on the nose. One thing about Marchand before we move on to Ovechkin, he now ties Cam Neely for most playoff goals in Bruins history, bolstering the Hall of Fame conversation, which I agree with you. He absolutely belongs in. Someone else who will absolutely be in the Hall of Fame, Alex Ovechkin, not having the greatest postseason though, as the Caps are down 2-0 in the series against the Rangers. Can he turn it around?
He has the potential to turn it around. I was there for game two when Spencer Carberry, the Capitals coach, called out Ovechkin's play, said he's off a little bit, said he's struggling, which is something that you don't often hear about Ovechkin in the playoffs from his coach. But then I followed up and I said, when you say struggling, Spencer Carberry, what do you mean? And he said a couple things that really resonate and are things to keep in mind for games three and four. One is that they expect Ovechkin to get 4 to 5 good scoring chances a game. He's not getting anywhere near that. So they're going to have to try to get him in better positions to try to really affect play. And the other thing, too, is the last change for being the home team is going to be key for the Capitals because the Rangers are sending out, you know, Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren against Ovechkin. I think they've done a really good job against him. Barclay Goodrow's done a good job against his line. They need to get better matchups for Ovi and at home, in theory, they should be able to get him better matchups and hopefully allow him to get more than one shot on goal in two games in New York. My God, no points, one shot on goal, not Ovechkin-like in a stat line. And of course, had that critical turnover that led to the Rangers' shorthanded goal game winner in game two.
Wish I predicted the Stars in four against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Now, did you say win or lose in four?
yeah, right. I'm definitely hearing about it on social right now. Why are the Dallas Stars looking more like Texas barbecue against the Vegas Golden Knights right now?
Well, they lost game one because Ottinger. He laid an egg, and he was better in game two. So he's not the reason they lost there. But they are down 2-0, and that's a problem, okay? Since the NHL switched to the wild card format in 2013-14, teams that lost their first two home games, games one and two at home, having home ice, they are 2-10 in those series in the first round. Overall, they are 3-24, Arda, when the team with home ice advantage loses the first two games at home. In the last 30 seasons, teams that have had home ice in the first round lost the first two games, as Dallas has, 10-25. In those series. So it is a hell of a hill to climb right now if you're the Dallas Stars. And by the way, you're going to Vegas where it's really hard to win. And oh, by the way, you're also playing the reigning Stanley Cup champions who look as dominant as they did at any point last year with the way they're playing right now.
And we talked a lot on this show about how Dallas seems to be the most complete team on many nights in the NHL, and Vegas is completely dismantling them at the moment.
They are.
Vancouver will be without a full squad. Thatcher Demko is out. It went from day to day to week to week. We may not see him for the rest of the postseason. That is a possibility. Can the Canucks win without Thatcher Demko, their number one goalie?
I don't think they can, man. I mean, I know that they are very, very talented in front of Demko, and you know, the the fact that Miller and Besser and Pettersson and Hughes are still healthy is great. But, you know, when you look over your shoulder and see Casey DeSmith versus seeing Thatcher Demko, it changes something psychologically. I think Thatcher Demko deserves as much credit as Rick Tocchet for helping this team go from, you know, bottom six or seven in the league defensively last year to within the top eight this year. To not have him there is to be at a supreme disadvantage in this series in goal. And look, there are things you can build on. I mean, the Predators had to block 10,000 shots to win game two. And I don't know if that's necessary. I think that might be sustainable for one round, but not two rounds, if we're being honest. So there are things that the Canucks can build on, but boy, when you lose, I mean, it's like getting your spine ripped out. It's like a fatality on Mortal Kombat, losing Thatcher Demko. What do you think? Do you think they have a shot still?
I mean, there's always a shot, but the Predators have so many powerful offensive pieces that, to your point, like Philip Forsberg is probably salivating at the option of shooting on Casey DeSmith and, you know, just his ridiculous play on the ice, especially in the offensive zone. He's probably loving this prospect. So this, the Nashville's, I mean, and here's the thing. A lot of people picked Nashville to win this series, right? This was the cool, you know, underdog pick of the first round. So, I mean, it just got better for the Predators.
Every year we do these dumb picks. I always like make my picks absent of knowing what anybody else is going to pick. And I always pick one that I think is going to be like the punk rock star, look at me alternative pick. Yep. And then I look at it and it's like, you know, 20 people pick the Predators. I'm like, come on, man.
20 people.
Let me have my moment here.
Yeah, no. This guy had his moment. What on earth is he thinking? this is the weirdest. Like, you, I know you've done jersey fouls for a very long time.
Yeah.
Wish this has been your thing for over a decade at least. Where does this rank in terms of the weirdest jersey fouls you've seen?
It is extremely weird. You know, I had to crack open the jersey foul book and look through it to find out exactly how to file this in the proper category. This is the denouncement of fandom foul, Arda. We found out through our close friends at Bar Down that this gentleman is a casual Boston fan for a couple of years. He had the jersey lying around his house. He was watching the playoffs, and he felt that it could be the Leafs season. So to jump on the bandwagon, to try to help them karmically, he decided to pivot and cover up all the Bostonian iconography on this jersey with Leafs logos and Leafs references. It is the denouncement of fandom foul. And we'll see if, well, I guess it didn't work because they lost game three. So maybe this guy's just rip apart his jersey and not try to bring him, run it back for game four. I don't know.
So does he have Bertuzzi on the back? I maybe we didn't see what he had on the back of the jersey, but that's the first Bruin to Leaf that came to mind anyway.
Yeah.
It's just such an odd jersey. Why would you even do that? Why would you can only wear that once, or you just bring it out every time the Bruins play the Leafs?
First of all, he was a casual Boston fan, so he's not doesn't have any attachment to that jersey. And he's trying to help. He's trying to something to change the vibe. Trying to exorcise the demons. Trying to figure out how to turn this ship around for the first time since 67 and point it towards the horizon. I respect it. I respect the ideals behind this jersey foul, even if it is abhorrent. And in fact, placing a Leafs logo on top of a Bruins logo, to me, it should be rejected like a faulty organ being transplanted into a body.
That sounds about right. I respect the fans of Utah showing up and showing out for their brand new team. Right? Wow. I respect Liam O'Brien letting the fans know that he is spicy tuna. I think he's going to become a fan favorite in Salt Lake City. But you had a chance to talk with Utah's new head coach / Arizona Coyotes coach, Andre Tournier, and it was a fun interview.
Joining us now on the drop, Utah head coach Andre Tournier. I'm still getting used to it, Bear. The idea that you are now the Utah head coach. Have you gotten used to it?
No, I have to, but really excited. I will say you probably saw some image of when we arrived in Salt Lake, when we landed, the people, the kids were in at the airport and the tarmac to welcome us, the excitement in their face, the beautiful, everything so far is unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you, this is your first look at the new barn, the new digs, the new facilities. What were your first impressions of Delta Center and the area?
You're too fast. I'm not there yet. We didn't go at the Delta Center yet. That's next on the agenda. We just had a brunch with here a member of the organization and all the staff, the players and everybody. So we're not at the Delta Center yet. It's just across the street. You can see it. Took a few pictures. Can send you those pictures, but did not get inside yet and see the layout. I spoke with Bill, which Bill went and he talked about the building, and yeah, you can see a spark in his eyes. So that's a lot of good emotion around the team right now.
That's great to hear. Well, have you had any interactions yet with Ryan and Ashley Smith, the new owners?
Yes, I did. I had the opportunity to meet them in Phoenix, and they told us about their story and what they want to accomplish. And it was amazing to hear their value, their core value, and why they're doing it, and how much they care about Utah, how much they care about the people in Utah, how much they believe in the states and the people. That honestly, that fill us up with emotion, with pride to be part of that moving forward. So yeah, you could see their core value are unbelievable.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How difficult has the last month been for you and the boys? I mean, I know that the losing streak that we've talked about, you know, coincided with a lot of these rumors cropping up about the team. But, you know, internally, there wasn't a lot of information. I talked to some of the players. They said they were getting their news from people like me and during this process. How tough was it inside the room for you and the guys?
Well, I think that I don't know the date exactly, but I can look on the calendar. It's the day we played in Edmonton when it went from rumor to news. I think at that moment, the team really gathered together and kind of closed the loop. And we stay really tight to each other and we fought for each other. I think that commitment and that composure in that situation was impressive from the player. I think they showed their character, and the way we approach it, we talk about it. You know, earlier in the season, we did not react to the distraction the way we should have the way we should have been. So we talk about, hey, here's the second opportunity. It's not every time you have a second opportunity to do something right. So we really tied up together and fight for each other and build our pride and feeling of belonging for each other. And we finished really strong. Having that said, yes, they had a lot of questions, a lot of wondering, okay, you know, we were asking each other about what about this? What about that? What will be our airplane company? Whatever the question you have, what about doctors? Some guys will have kids. What will you do during the summer? When were you planning to move there? What's the plan? That were all those kind of topic of conversation around the team, which is normal. They're human being. But at the same time, their level of professionalism was amazing. I think they really stay focused on the task, and we finish the season strong. We can be proud of that.
Were you ever worried that if relocation happened, that you'd be out of a gig? Or did you assume that you'd coach wherever this team was headed?
No, I did not assume that. It's a possibility. You never know. In that sport, first, you never know what's tomorrow old for you. So that, I never take that for granted. I just thought in life, if you do what's good for you, problem will happen. I think if you do what's good for the team every day, people will see that. If people expect me to be perfect, that's not going to happen. I will make mistakes. I do mistakes every day. That's just being human. But I do my best, and I work in the I make sure I do. I do everything I do. It's for the team. That's my mindset. Everything I do is for the player. And if that's good enough for Ryan and Ashley, I will be. I'm a really happy man.
Yeah, for sure. I did want to ask you one question about your time in Arizona. It's pretty clear from what Commissioner Gary Bettman has said that the Mullet Arena problem was a problem. They didn't want to stay there until 2027 and maybe beyond that. They kind of were scared about there being playoff games and Stanley Cup final games being played there. I was curious, after 2 years in that building, what was maybe the biggest challenge for you as a coach playing in a facility like that?
it was not on our level. It's the upper level. At our level, building was full. The atmosphere was unbelievable. The people who've been in Mullen understand what I'm saying right now. The people who doesn't think I'm full of it, they think it's impossible. They were vibe there. They were atmosphere. At my level, coaches, player, that was not the problem. The problem is revenue. The problem is growth of the game, the growth of the market. That it's a bigger issue. And at some point, and I understood the point. As a league, you where there's a not a revenue sharing, but a salary cap, which is based on revenue, you want to have your business and be able to generate revenue. And I understand that, but it's not. That question is not for me at highest level. We had success at Mullet. Our team played hard at Mullet. I never hear any player complain about anything in Arizona. I think the point is not there. The point is it's the NHL. 5,000 seats doesn't make it. That's as simple as that.
It's a great answer. I appreciate that. A couple more for you. You're in a real unique spot, man. You know, coaches have a lot on their plate in the off season, getting ready for the next season, but you've got your plate is like Thanksgiving full right now. Like you've got more on your plate than any other guy in this league right now, Bear. what are some of the extra tasks that you know you need to accomplish this summer before year one in Utah?
First, it was important for us to wrap up the season, debrief the season. There's a move, but before the move, there will be a hockey season next year with 82 games. So that's how do we... What did we do this year? What we do good? What we didn't do good with every department, high performance, the medical, the equipment, the analytic department, every department and see, okay, what's the improvement we want to do with our skill guy and all of it. So we debrief, we finished yesterday at 1 p.m. That was the end of our debrief. Now we build a bunch of tasks, of project for the playoff, observation, want to do another team, thing we want to do better, and there's a ton of work. We go each coach go in their way, and they will work at it, and we will meet again early June here in Salt Lake City. So that's the plan. So that's the first thing, is take care of the hockey. Then for us coaches, then after we'll have all the new facility, practice facility, the game facility, the schedule, building the schedule. We got a Snapchat of what can be the schedule moving forward. So we'll see what the traveling and all of it. So that will be the normal part, which the special task will be, okay, what will be our practice facility? How we can make it fantastic? How can we build all our scheduling and everything? And then it will be the moving of every family and making sure they have a place to train as early as possible so they can get set up in the Salt Lake City.
Will you check in more with the players than you normally would during an off season just to make sure that they do have all those life details worked out?
Yeah. In that sense, yes. I'm not the kind of guy who call the guys talk hockey every week. At some point, the guys, I think they need a breather talking hockey, but I will talk to the person. Does your wife is set up? Does the school for the kid is set up? What about the doctor? What about those kind of things? Just make sure and don't kid yourself. Like I will not be the guys who can fix their problem, but I know who to ask to fix their problem. So I will just stay in touch with them like I do every year, make sure everything's going smooth, everything is well. And if they need something, we have an unbelievable organization who will help them, whatever is the need.
That's awesome. Two more for you. Right now, the names that we have found out are trademarked for the team, potentially, Mammoth Ice Yetis, Venom Fury Blizzard, Outlaws, and Utah Hockey Club. Andre, do you have a favorite from that group?
I want the fans to have an input on that. I want to serve them as good as we can. And whatever they choose, I'm on board. I think it's I really like when we talk with Ryan and Ashley, their philosophy of doing it for the people in Utah. And it's their team. So I'm looking forward to see what they think about it and what will be their choice.
You upset that Bears isn't a choice.
Well, there's a conflict there.
Yeah, there is a bit of a conflict there. Exactly. I agree. There is a bit of a conflict. Finally, the question I'm sure everybody in Utah is asking, how close is this team to becoming a contender in the Western Conference? And what are the areas that you think need to be addressed maybe through a big budgeted free agency splurge this summer?
You know, the strategy and how we'll improve the team, that's on Bill. That he will, he has this plan how he wants to improve the team. I think for us, I think we have a lot of good piece in place. I think if you look at our team, the talent level in our team, the young player who are coming, who are not necessarily in our team, but they're coming. There's a lot to be excited about. I think we're top three in the league for goal scorers since March 1st. We have talent. Now, talent need time to develop. How far are we? Time will tell.
Awesome. Well, from the desert of Arizona to the Great Salt Lake in Utah, Andre, you are on quite a journey. Congratulations, my friend, and have a nice, relaxing summer.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Speaking of Utah, the owner, Ryan Smith, has publicly said that the way that he will decide the team name will be by fan bracket. The fans will vote on the name of the team. And there has also been reports of 8 particular names that have been trademarked by the company that now owns the Utah entity, the team allegedly. That will be allegedly.
Yeah. The internet sleuths are sleuthing as usual. And these are the 8 names they believe are tied in some way with the Smith Entertainment Group.
Yes. And so we decided to do some legwork for this cause early. We took it to a vote. We did the Mascot Madness in the month of March, which did very well. And we appreciate everybody who contributed and voted. And the mascots for participating. Shout out to Victor E. Green, your 2024 Mascot Madness champion. We said, hey, let's just keep the vote vibes going and help out Utah and help out Ryan Smith and see who would be the early winner of the Utah name. So the 8 alleged names are the Mammoth, Ice, Yetis, Venom, Blizzard, Fury, Outlaws, and HC, otherwise known as Hockey Club. We put them to
Hockey
a bracket.
Club.
Hockey Club. All right. So Mammoth. So we put them in a best of one bracket. Mammoth right. versus Ice was a first round matchup. Mammoth got 76.5% of the vote, Wish.
That is encouraging. I don't want to sway the vote. You know, I don't want to necessarily say where I am on all of this right now, but I will tell you that if the goal of a National Hockey League franchise is to create revenue, that selling sweet little plushy mammoths and naming your mascot Wooly and having him hug children during games would be a very, very easy way to basically pay for your roster in year one. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that sounds great. And also Ice just feels, what is it going to be like, ice cubes? Like Ice just seems so too on the nose.
Also, let's not forget, I mean, there are like Wooly mammoths in pop culture. You could easily, you know, get like Ray Romano to do your voiceover from Ice.
Oh, here comes Utah's NHL team. Oh, look at that. They're on the ice. It'd be great.
That's pretty good. Pretty good impression. Yeti's got 80.8% of the vote against the Venom. I'm surprised by that. I thought Venom would have a little bit more fandom behind it.
I mean, clearly people think that Venom is a little too edgy, maybe a little too MCU, or maybe MCU at some point. So yeah, I'm not too shocked by that. And also, like, you know, the problem with Venom is the problem with some of these team names, which is that they lack an S at the end. And as we've learned in covering this hot topic, the plural of Yeti is Yetis. So it does help.
Now we know. That applies for the mythical creature and the cup. So that's
right.
The Blizzard won 66% of the vote over Fury. I like Blizzard. I feel like that's one of the favorites.
Yeah, and Utah Fury sounds very like juxtaposed to me. I think of Utah as a pristine place with some serenity, real Mormon vibe. Fury is not something that I necessarily associate with Salt Lake City.
And finally, the Outlaws, 71% over Hockey Club. Oh, HC Hockey Club.
doesn't outlaws get is dope. We don't have vote. We don't have like outlaws in the NHL right now. Like it's been a minor league team before in Vegas, for example, but we don't have it there. And that's kind of a cool, it's a cool vibe. You know, I think you can do a lot of really cool things with outlaws.
So what we're gonna do is we're gonna put the semifinals up and the final, and by Monday's show, pardon me, we will have a winner, a definitive name. We'll actually announce it as such. We will tag Ryan Smith and say, this is your name. We have done the work for you. This is what you should be naming your team. And we will give him concepts, mock-ups of logos and colors and mascots, everything. Dude, maybe
he's
not
a very
all
busy
that. That's
man.
A lot of work.
He is a very busy man. I've talked to him. He's got a lot going on. We're going to try to help him out as best we can.
So off seasons are also very busy in the NHL. We already have some coaching news. David Quinn out as coach of the San Jose Sharks. I'll say this, which it's a little surprising to me just because my first thought was, yeah, they were going to be bad. So it's not necessarily David Quinn's fault that the team struggled this year. So why the change now?
Well, I spoke with Mike Greer, their GM, yesterday, and wondered the same thing. And he kind of indicated, not directly, but inferred it enough, that they were going to be bad, but maybe they didn't want to be this bad. They didn't want to be minus 150 goal differential bad. And I also kind of picked up a vibe of maybe they weren't really liking some of the development of their younger players under Dave Quinn. It seemed like maybe a little bit. So the thing I asked Greer was, where are you headed next? I mean, are you looking for someone with NHL experience? Are you looking for a younger coach? I do think they're going to hire somebody that does have NHL experience. They're not going to like pluck somebody from college for this gig. But I do think that he's contemplating the idea of getting somebody younger who can maybe grow with this team a little bit when you have a number of really good prospects, maybe more on the way if you have Macklin Celebrini, for example. So we'll see where they go.
More coaching news. Lindy Ruff officially reintroduced, just like Jay-Z. Allow me to reintroduce myself. Lindy Ruff back as head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. What do you make of that?
I mean, he's more of a Ruff rider, I suppose, if you think about it, Arda. But,
nice.
You know, so like, listen, they're hiring him to make a young team better. And I think that there are things that he did in New Jersey that really fill out that resume. When you have Jack Hughes, one of the best hockey players on the planet, saying that Lindy Ruff made me a better player, then I think that's a pretty good endorsement. That's that you put that blurb on the back of the book. Great, Arda. You know, so he's got a little bit of that going for him. But again, I can't get over the fact that the Devils improved by close to 48 points year over year, made the playoffs, beat the Rangers, exited in the second round, and then dropped by almost the same number of points the following season. There are reasons for it. Injuries, the goaltending went to crap. Like, we know that we've done in the autopsy on this team before, but it also is Andrew Brunette being hired and then leaving for Nashville, who, oh, by the way, made the playoffs this year. So there's a little bit of how good were the Devils really when Ruff was there, and how much credit does he deserve. The interesting thing about this hire, though, Arda, is like, how much work Kevin Adams has had to do to try to sell this as not simply being a nostalgia play. Like, he coached under Ruff for 2 years before becoming general manager. It's clear that if you are one that believes Terry Pegula, the owner, is the one making all these hires, that A, Terry's got an affinity for Ruff because Ruff was there for, 15 seasons, and B, Ruff's the last guy to make the playoffs for this team. So it was interesting. I can't remember the last time, instead of extolling the virtues of what this coach means to the team and what he'll do and how he'll improve what's gone wrong, there was as much energy spent on that as spent on, look, this is not simply just us dabbling in nostalgia here in Buffalo. It was kind of crazy.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, he's coming to a team that actually, to me, has a lot of exciting components to it. There's bright pieces at each position. I mean, I think their defense core is terrific. With the two number one overall picks, Dahlin and Power, and then you have Samuelson and Bo Byram now. I mean, that's a solid top four. Yeah. And then you have two goaltenders, if they hit, in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and let's say Devin Levi matures into a solid backup or a 1B option. That's a great goaltending tandem, especially the way UPL played this season. And then you just need a couple pieces offensively. Their top line is good. Like, you add a couple of pieces offensively, that's a wild card contending team.
Yeah. Devin Levi going from Padawan to Jedi is what you mean?
To Jedi Master. Exactly. Jedi Knight. Yeah, exactly.
So, look at they are everything's there for them to break out. I mean, if he's the right coach, they get. I think the goaltending is the real key, like you said, for next season. It's just funny how like I don't know. There was no like pool of candidates. It just seemed like the minute Lindy Ruff, the minute they decided to move on from Don Granato, it seemed like Lindy Ruff was the choice, and that's kind of weird. Yeah. A lot, when especially when you have a lot of teams that have said, we're going to wait to see how the first round plays out before we're going to make any hires, because there might be somebody who shakes free in the first round that we either can't talk to right now or we didn't know was going to be available. So Sabres found their guy pretty quickly.
Listen, sometimes you can appreciate the fact that you know what you want, you get it.
There cool. You go.
That's the way it is.
And sometimes you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, Arda, you just might find that you get what you need.
You get what you need. Yeah, that hits the heart. That certainly does. That does it for us here on The Drop. Thanks for listening every Monday and Thursday on the playoffs, during the playoffs, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well. The NHL and ESPN YouTube. We will see you after the weekend.
Take care.